This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast show. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for the aftermath of the first Villa Park game of the 2019-20 season from Villa on Tour, Mr. Max Stokes.
Hello.
And returning back after a brief trip to the States, Mr. Chris Budd, welcome.
Hello.
So we're actually freshly back from the new spruced up Villa Park. What did you think of the new spruced up Villa Park? Golden Lions.
Nice paint job.
Fresh lick of paint.
Nicely wrapped the back of the north stand, and they've somehow managed to make the ticket office look marginally less shit. Still needs to be bulldozed, though.
That's what I thought. I was getting excited when I went round the corner because
you didn't see a pile of rubble.
I thought it had been knocked down. But alas, not. What else? Those screens, they were meant to be big screens.
I know, yeah, I was very disappointed that I actually couldn't see any replays again.
Did they change the angle on that one on the north-south side? Or has it always been at that shitty angle?
It's rubbish.
But apart from that, I thought it looked pretty good. It looked definitely an improvement.
Absolutely.
Max, did you recognise the place when you turned up?
Well, I didn't go round the ground to see like the stuff on the north stand, but inside the whole end concourse, like the food stalls and stuff, that looks a little bit more spruced up a little bit. So although I'm sure we'll come onto it at some point, the prices have come up a little bit. But now I think overall it looks nice, but I look forward to...
What's the Villa dog now? It's like pushing a fiver.
Can't we get curry in the ground now as well, and like jerk chicken and stuff as well?
I did go in there contemplating eating and maybe even having a pint of purity, but you know, when you've got like a full house, the queues are just ridiculous.
£4.50 for purity.
Is it?
Yeah.
The price of ale.
I'm shocked.
I'm going to have to start smuggling drinks in, to be honest.
Dave's going to turn up with a hip flask.
I was in the, where was I? I was in the upper Trinity for this game, and there was a great moment, and naivety actually paid off, where there was a couple, and each of them had a couple of bottles of Heineken, and they walked them up to the seats, and they had bottle tops on two of those bottles as well, and everybody was like looking at them as if they're like some kind of aliens or something. So they obviously, you know, hadn't been before, and just waltzed in with the beers and managed to enjoy their beers during the first half. I think they got found out at half time because they didn't bring drinks in, but I could have done with a couple of beers in my seat for the especially for the first 10 minutes anyway, but we'll get on to that. Right, coming up on the show, 3 points that takes in managers are already getting sacked. We also look at the aftermath of the Super Cup, a trophy that Aston Villa once won in 1983. And we we also look at what's brewing up to be potentially a more fierce rivalry than Blues Villa in English football. We'll also have the Scott Hogan touch count as Scott Hogan turns into the fiercest striker in the Championship. And of course, we'll look at Villa's first home game against the Cherries. Right, let's get into the first part of the show, the 3 points. I think Mr. Stokes is kicking us off with point number one.
I am indeed. 2 weeks into the new football season and two managers already down. The first one... For God's sake. This is the first one. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right. Jan Sievert from Huddersfield Town. He got sacked after the Fulham defeat. He joined the club from Borussia Dortmund in January 2019. But after just 4 competitive games this season, Huddersfield Town terminated the contract with an immediate effect. So it seems quite harsh, but...
Was he David Wagner light or David Wagner zero, maybe?
Yeah, they're going for this German model, aren't they? And it just hasn't really worked. I watched a bit of the Fulham game, actually, to be fair. They weren't anything special. But there you go, that's the end of him.
Because I remember the first game that I saw of him, obviously when we played them early doors, when we came down to the Championship, when Wagner was in charge. And they were quite a feisty team, actually. I always remember that substitute that came off the bench, that German. And I think he scored the goal where Gallini booted it. It bounced off his arse and went in.
And who'd have thought that mob would have got promoted that season?
Yeah, no, crazy. But yeah, what don't they know that they knew last season when they got relegated with him? Because he took over January, so he had enough time.
Because isn't he... Something like they've got, he had one win in 19. Like, I don't see what's changed that much. Yeah. They were dreadful last season. They were never going to be amazing this season. So yeah. It seems a bit strange.
It's like if you're going to say, right, let's give him the benefit of the doubt and let's see what he can do in the Championship. We give him more than a few, 4 games in total.
3 in the Championship as well. Shocking, really.
Yeah. No, exactly.
I don't know what they expected either. Like, where are they? Setting the bar at Huddersfield? They punched so far above their weight, just being in the top half of the Championship, let alone getting into the Premier League. It's ridiculous.
So, with the Huddersfield model, Dean Smith's got one more game against Everton.
Oh,
make or break.
And who was the second manager to disappear?
The second one was Sol Campbell from Macclesfield. Again, not given too much time after he arrived this year, I believe it was. But yeah, not ideal.
But he left though, didn't he? It wasn't like he was...
Well, it's claimed it was a bit of a mutual thing. So I think from what I've read, him and various players hadn't been paid. So I think it was one of these where he said, well, I've set out to do what I had to do. You wanted me to keep you up. Yeah. I've kept you up. If you're not going to pay me, I'm off. And I think the club, from the sounds of it, were only too happy to say, okay, well, we're not going to be able to pay you, so fair enough, you can go.
Yeah, obviously Sol's not short of a few bob, so he's got fuck-off money, so he can just say, fuck off, basically. Right, point number two, the aftermath of the Super Cup. Liverpool obviously beat Chelsea on penalties, mainly thanks to a Tammy Abraham miss, which it was a similar penalty to the one he did against West Brom, didn't he? But the keeper... obviously, it was straight down the middle, and the keeper, although he came off his line a bit early with the new rules that people are complaining that VAR didn't pick up. Anyway, what happens normally when a black player misses a penalty in a major tournament? Cue a ton of racial abuse on Twitter, which happened straight away. Kick it out, have condemned it as they usually do. I mean, this has been going on. I always remember 2012, the Euros, when Ashley Young and Ashley Cole missed for England against Italy. And that was that was an eye opener for me when I saw the amount of racism and the amount of tweets, calling them black C-U-N-Ts and obviously the N-word as well. And it's just like, Jesus. And, we haven't moved on. And Abraham obviously got the same sentiments from a bunch of arseholes. And it's just more evidence that Twitter is a cesspool. I think, Tammy Abraham probably more concerned with the actual miss itself, because obviously he's trying to prove himself at Chelsea. Meanwhile, in France, a game was actually suspended for a minute. AS Nancy versus Le Mans was stopped. This is at French second division. Was stopped after the 27th minute because of homophobic chants, and the players of AS Nancy went up to the crowd to basically tell them to shut the fuck up. And the tannoy said, this game would be suspended if they didn't stop, and it kicked off 1 minute later. Still problems in football from, idiots, basically. And, these things always crop up in the 3 points, which is a shame. Anyway, point number three. Chris?
So the conflict between Wimbledon and MK Dons that's been going on for many years now. Thank you. Rages on. Midweek just gone was obviously the Carabao Cup first round where Wimbledon lost 4-2 on penalties to MK Dons. Previously, Wimbledon had been disciplined by the EFL for breaching regulations in regard to the use of the opposition's name, where basically Wimbledon refused to use the word Dons in the matchday programme, on the scoreboard and on the tickets. So they were obviously given disciplinary action.
Well, they were ordered, wasn't they? They were ordered at the start of the season by the EFL that this shall never happen again.
Yep.
And they have to have Dons on the scoreboard, matchday programme, tickets, etc.
And but this time round, they've found their own loophole to uphold their own principles by saying, well, we're not going to print a matchday programme. And the scoreboard's broken, which I think is quite clever. And I like the sheer pettiness of it. I love a bit of shithousery like that.
It's not pettiness. Don't undermine it. It's principles. It's like, no, fuck you. Because what happened is, scandalous.
We haven't really seen anything like that. And certainly not in my lifetime. It's the first time I've seen that happen. So this is a really interesting rivalry.
It would be like moving Aston Villa to Coventry.
And calling us Coventry villains or something.
Cov Villa or something. Cov Villa, all one word. But yeah, no, I hope they carry on.
I think it's great.
Principled approach. I love the, oh shit, the scoreboard's broken. Before we go on, I just want to give a shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons who have joined this week. Thank you very much to William Dunyan, Tony Carr, Stephen Tatlow, Paul Totney, Wine Corner. That is actually not a made up name. Lloyd Gross, Colin Curry. And thanks to Rob Scott South for upping his pledge as well. Thank you very much to all the patrons, as well as the ones that have joined this week. These are the guys that obviously make this show happen. If you want to also support us, and please do. In the close season, I had an offer from a betting company to actually sponsor the show, and they really wanted to sponsor the Scott Hogan Touch Count. And I like the idea of that just because I thought it was funny that a big, well-known sponsor would sponsor the Scott Hogan Touch Count. But it showed that they were kind of in on the joke as well. But it just doesn't, unless they paid real super good money, it goes against the principles, like the AFC Wimbledon principles. You got to stick by them, and I'd rather be a supporter funded rather than, you know, having to curtail and make compromises to especially betting companies. I mean, certainly if a Villa fan's got a local business or something and wants to sponsor the Scott Hogan Touch Count, drop me a line, and you won't have to pay betting company prices, put it that way. But please do, if you want to become a patron, please do go to myomansaid.com and click on the patron option on the menu for further details. Thank you very much. Speaking of Scott Hogan, should we go? Let's go early with the Scott Hogan Touch Count. Who cares about Villa versus the Cherries?
Let's get into the real business.
One person actually joined the Mad Few group. And when you join the Mad Few Facebook group, you're asked three questions, simple questions. How long have you been listening to the show? Where do you listen? And what do you like about the show? Normally, people always say we like the Scott Hogan Touch Count. And the first person said, you know, they said, oh, I like this, I like that. Not over keen with the Scott Hogan Touch Count.
What?
Like, how do you block these people?
You don't need this sort of negativity in your life, do you?
Get rid.
Get rid. I'm surprised I let him in. I let him through the front door. No idea why. Right then, Scott Hogan, this is the ever-evolving, and it's almost like a game show, where we're trying to find the utopian rules. So we're going to change the rules every episode until we find the rules. Right, we're going to have best of three. And this time, you have two guesses each. But I'm not going to tell you who's the closest.
Okay.
So you'll have the first guess and then the second guess. And unless you nail it in the first one, I'll stay just quiet. And then if after the first two guesses, if you're within, shall we say, two or three of the actual one, then you'll be declared the winner if one of you is. But if you're not, then we'll have another guess. Should I declare who's closest after those two if we go to a third one?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. So the idea is to cut out the higher and lower mentality of guessing. Right, Scotty Hogan. Let's go with Scotty Hogan first. Hopefully nobody's been cheating. Who's going first?
Go on.
I will. I think, let's go for it.
I think we'll go, well, let Max Stokes, because he had some decent A-level results. I forgot this show.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, I forgot this show has a vested interest in your education.
In fact, if anything, we can take some credit for this, I think.
Yeah, the revision helped. It really did.
Yeah, apparently, because you declare... Oh, no, I think it was just speaking to me where you told me... Oh, no, it was the last show. Did you say it on the show? I can't remember. It's your private life. We don't want to give away your results or anything, but...
Oh, you can do if you want. I don't mind.
But you
have you got an envelope sample?
You told me what you were expecting, but you actually got higher than what you expected.
I did. Yeah, I'm very happy. And the revision helped.
I think it's down to this show, really. That's
it absolutely is. Thank you so much.
It's an educational show. We basically lift people's IQs as soon as they listen to the show. And lower our own, exactly. You just absorb our brains slowly. And when it gets to the 200th show, we'll be a spent force. So, Max Stokes, he's now off to, is it Cambridge University you're going to now? You're ditching
Oxford,
that,
actually.
Oh, okay. You're ditching that Villa on tour nonsense and going to Oxford. A new life awaits. Oxford United on tour. Right, anyway, Scott Hogan played for Stoke. He's starting now. He's the Villa dark days are over. I don't think he hasn't lasted 90 minutes yet, but he got close to it this time. He managed 83 minutes. That's 83 minutes. He scored a goal in the 2-2 draw at home against Derby. That Butland guy, he's shipping goals every game, isn't he?
And he's made a few awful mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
Dodged a bullet. Ooh, he doesn't want to be there.
Do you think he's doing it on purpose?
Yep. Here's what you could have won, Jack.
But no, nobody should be paying 20 million for him anyway. I knew as soon as they said 20 million, Villa weren't going to move for that. But anyway, 83 minutes. First guess, Max Stokes. How many touches?
I'm going to go pretty big for Scott Hogan. Oof. I'm going to, because, you know, he's new lease of life and all that. I'm going to go 20.
Ooh. I'm going to say 83 minutes. 23.
Have you got some kind of equation, like how many touches he gets per 10 minutes or something?
Yeah.
You've got a formula.
I've got an algorithm made up already.
Right then, that's going to round two. I've jotted those down. So you basically, to win, you've got to be within two of the actual score. And if nobody is, then we go to a third and final round. So Max says 20, Mr. Bud says 23. Max Stokes on the hockey.
Okay, I'm going to go 17.
I'm going to go with 20.
Ooh, winner is, because it was only one off, 24 it was.
Oh.
24 touches. Chris Bird with 23.
Back in the game.
This might be the format. The Stokes has not scored or hasn't won a point because you got beat 2-0 in the last show.
I did.
What's
awful.
Going on?
Blame it on
What's
the service.
Going on? Right, last week against Spurs, Mings was the guy against all odds. It's normally a midfielder or somebody, a fullback, gets the most touches. But Mings had the most touches with 53. Grealish had 52. This time, it was Elmo, business as usual. How many touches did he have?
Oh, I bet he had quite a few.
So, who wants to go first? Oh, it's Chris.
I'll take the lead on this one. I'm going to go with 63.
Ooh. Before you said that, I had 64 in my mind, so I'm going to go with that, 64.
Right, okay. Second round?
70.
Oh, I had that in my mind as well. Oh, what is going on? Okay.
what is this mind reading that's going on?
What is this sorcery?
Okay. This should be banned. You're not allowed to mind read, okay?
Okay. 76.
Right, well, we're going into a third round.
Ooh.
Max was the closest, so that's the clue.
Okay. Wow.
So take it from there. Elmo played the whole 90 minutes.
75.
77.
Well, I'm going to have to give it to Max because it's actually 100. It's 105.
Fucking hell. Neither of us are even close. Jesus
no,
Christ.
Exactly.
Talk about the outball. Jesus Christ. And not one assist all bloody game. 100 and something touches. No assists.
And he also had the highest pass completion, 91.6.
Bloody hell. Fair play.
normally the only person who's got over 100 is Elmo last season. This is from memory. And I think Grealish managed it or got very close once. But normally it's only a fullbacks that can get up to that amount.
And there's people calling for Gilbert.
Yeah. You've got to get the ball off Elmo first.
He's got
almost
the shirt,
impossible.
Hasn't he?
Right then, Max is going first. I'm going to give you a choice. Do you want to play the Dougie Louise game or do you want to play the Wesley game? You got a choice of two Brazilians. Who should we go for?
I'll say Louise for that goal. Let's go for him.
Right, let's go for Louise. So Louise, did he play the whole game? He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
90 minutes. How many touches for Dougie?
Okay. 55.
Mr. Bird?
80.
Game over. Chris Bird wins.
Boom! Oh.
Bang on the money.
It's because I've been paying attention.
How have you managed that?
I watched the game.
It's fixed. Oh, come on. Did you count, did you?
I sit there with my pad and pen.
I bet
like keeping the cricket score and my thermos flask and my anorak.
And his binoculars.
I'm in the wrong game, man. I'm wasted doing this. I should go and work for Opta or something.
To be fair, the amount of times that he had the ball playing out, it's like Elmo, you know, it's normally the back line.
Everything went through him, didn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, Mings was obviously going to have a high score as well.
Who's the next highest after those two?
I think Mings had 82.
Right, yeah.
So that was the second. Dougie Louise had he had the second highest pass completion, 91.2, which is pretty good.
Unfortunately, the stats don't mean shit when you've lost.
Exactly. And, when you're looking at Elmo and Louise, a lot of those balls are, basically ticking by or offloading the ball to somebody else. So the drought goes on for Mr. Stokes in the world of the Scott Hogan touch count.
At least I scored.
Did you?
Got to look at the positives.
Did you?
Yeah, I got the middle one, didn't I?
I thought it was 2-0, wasn't it?
I mean, neither of us got close on that one.
The Elmo one. You gave
it to sorry. Me. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
Trying to take it off me, VAR. Disgusting.
You were so far away that...
don't care.
you're about 30 off, so we're giving it... We've called VAR into this, and they're saying he hasn't earned that.
It touched his arm. I'm having it.
Anyway, 2-1. Sorry about that. You got beat, though, in the end. It's losing at the end of the day. Right, anyway, onwards to the game in question, where we prove that these stats mean absolutely nothing when it boils down to the meat and gravy. We start from the start. The first 10 minutes, the first minute, what the hell was Heaton doing?
I mean, that is the epitome of rush of blood to the head, wasn't it?
Yeah, this guy was going nowhere, was he?
Totally unnecessary.
Heaton, he's not a 9 out of 10 at the moment because he's, if you're just basing it on the two games we've seen, his kicking was a bit woeful against Spurs. It wasn't that great against Bournemouth, to be honest. But that the rush of blood on that one. I mean, I thought he's going to save this, isn't he? That's how this is scripted. Gives away a penalty in the first minute, then he saves it, and then it's, fuck you, Jack Buckland, and we have a new hero. But didn't look good from that point. And then you've got Dougie Louise doing stepovers on the edge of his own box.
Yeah, that was a weird one. With the Heaton thing as well, when I saw it in real time, I didn't really make much of it when that ball got slipped through because I was like, okay, that's going through to Heaton. Surely he'll dive down and claim that. But I've watched it back and I just think he's got time to go and like swipe it with his arms and slide on the floor. But I don't know what goes through his head to think he's going to go and use his feet. What's he trying to do there? I really don't understand what he's trying to do. I think he's quite naive and I think he's just got caught in two minds and he's made a bit of an error, and it is a really bad one, to be fair, but that wasn't ideal. The Louise one as well, he must have got a call or something, because I don't know why he's just let that go in the middle of the park in a dangerous area.
Yeah.
Harry Wilson has a strike. It's lucky. Let's be honest, it's lucky. It comes off Tyrone Mings, just goes in off the post as well, and it's pretty much killed us.
Most goals do come off Tyrone Mings this season, I've noticed.
Yeah, but that was a bigger deflection this time around, wasn't it?
Bloody hell.
I took it right in.
But yeah, there wasn't anybody close to Louise, was there? Because you said you might have heard a call or something, but there wasn't anybody close to him.
Which is strange for someone who clearly likes to put his foot on the ball and play. You think, why is he doing... It doesn't seem like a stepovers kind of player. And you would surely never do that in your own half anyway.
Because I think half of these mistakes, and obviously if you look back to Grealish's against Spurs, I think you could probably file them under teething troubles in terms of this playing out at the back and obviously new players. I mean, I mentioned it before. I think there's the Pep Guardiola documentary. Is it Take the Ball, Play the Ball? I can't remember the title. We gave away to patrons some free DVDs of it, where Barcelona were giving the ball away cheaply in the early games under Pep Guardiola when he was obviously instilling his philosophy. So I think part of it's down to that, and obviously, hopefully, they'll sharpen up and those mistakes will disappear, because I think they've been the difference from Villa getting points this season is just these howlers of mistakes, which when you look at Grealish, he's thinking, you know, he's been told, obviously, let's play it out, let's be constructive. And maybe Heaton was thinking, well, let's be constructive with this ball rather than just, you know, lamping it up. Luiz probably thinks we can play free-flowing football, you know, on the edge of our own 18. But I mean, would you agree with that? It's part of it stemming from this mentality that is the first thing in their mind. That's what they've been told. They've got to kind of play it out now and be constructive.
For now, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But it's one of these things where, you know, Grealish did it two or three times against Tottenham, didn't he? And then the final time he did it, obviously, it cost them a goal. It seems to be almost similar to last season, really, that every time they make a mistake, they get punished for it.
Yeah.
And they weren't getting, you know, particularly many breaks of the ball throughout the game, to be honest. There were lots of little sort of second balls and little times the ball fell and it would always fall to a Bournemouth guy. I just think they didn't get any luck today at all, Villa. As much as you earn your own luck at times as well. But, you know, I don't think Villa were good value for the win today, and definitely not at Tottenham. But I don't see why we couldn't have got a point out of either. I wouldn't have said Bournemouth deserved to lose today. It was very much a draw type game.
Yeah, but just sticking to the topic of actually the way we're playing is we're going to be constructive playing it out the back. You'll notice that Mings stays on the edge of the 6-yard box for when Heaton takes his goal kicks, so he just like taps it across to him to kind of build from the back. I mean, there was actually two guys behind me, and one of them said, I think this is like after 20 minutes, just lump it up. And the other guy said, no, that's not what they're being told. They're going to make mistakes as they, you know, learn to play this way and get into it. And it's going to take games to do that. You can't just suddenly switch to playing safety first, because in the long term, once you master it, then obviously it turns into a revolution. And, you know, you see what Manchester City are doing, and anybody else who plays with that mentality, you are controlling possession, basically, and control the game, you know, that way. But I think there'll be more of this in the early stages, more mistakes potentially.
I think especially with the new rules, with teams obviously being able to play from inside their own penalty area, I think you might find that being a bit of a theme in the first half of the season, where a few teams, I think, will play themselves into trouble, us obviously included.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, the big decision in terms of team selection last week was obviously the fullbacks, if you wanted the headline. That was obviously carried on after their performance, I think, you know, defensively, and that's all we were really given against Spurs, was to see them defensively, because we didn't really, with 30% possession, get forward to the extent that fullbacks could get forward and overlap. So they started again. I wasn't surprised. I think on the last show, we expected Hourihane to play because it was at home, and obviously he's got a bit of end product there. But Luiz, obviously rated and fancied by Smith, started. And what did you think of him?
I thought it was quite good. I think in the first half, there was a few moments where he got the ball and he just did the right things, but did it a little bit slowly. I thought he could have done it a little bit faster, but overall, I think he's got the right thing in his mind. I think when he gets the ball, he knows what he's doing. He picks out the right pass. He sprayed the ball. I think he gets the ball. He knows what he wants to do with it. I think he's a very technically gifted player. I think he's different to Horahan to some degree, but I think he made the mistake today, but he's going to take time. And I think if he gets game time throughout the season, you know, 90 minutes, I think he could be a really, really good player. I think John Percy said it on Twitter. I think he's got the makings of a really, really good footballer. And that goal today, I think we'll come on to it, but that just shows it. I think he's got a lot of potential. Hopefully he can fulfil it at Villa this season.
Finney, just before he scored that, I was thinking, right, we're chasing the game now, and he has been sitting deep. Obviously, you know, being told to sit deep. So I'd be interested to see what he actually offers when we go forward and if he could get forward a bit more. And obviously then, you know, within 5 minutes of thinking this, he scores that goal. But then there was another bit where I think he broke through down on the right. But I think his final ball wasn't that hot. But that's what I'm thinking. If when we're playing at home and let's say it's up to us to run the show, and obviously in this case because we were 2-0 down, I'd like to see him come forward more. But, you know, there's other questions like, where is Marvellous? What's happened to him? Has anybody asked the question at press conferences or anything?
I think it'd be interesting to know just to see where these guys sit in the pecking order, because I would have thought today, having had at least a couple of weeks to train with the side. I think he feature at Charlton? I can't remember if he did or in Leipzig. But he's definitely had like plenty of time to train with the squad now. So I would have thought if he's there or thereabouts, he should have been on the bench, surely ahead of someone like a Lansbury. Because I kind of looked down the bench today before the game and thought, who's going to come on and change the game today?
Because I thought Marvellous would be ahead of Louise in the pecking order just from, you know, his big game experience. Obviously, the last couple of seasons, Louise has been playing in La Liga, but for a team that obviously got relegated at the end of last season, while Marvellous has been playing in the Champions League. And if you look at the results and the 0-0 draws against Dortmund and Atletico Madrid, you would put a lot of that surely down to him playing a defensive midfield role. So you'd think, well, he's got to be, I mean, people talk about him being like Kante light or whatever, but you would thought he would have been ahead of the, you know, in terms of the pecking order, but it's a bit worrying that he's not even on the bench. And again, Gilbert not even on the bench. And what we were lacking in this game, and, you know, let's move on to what's happening down the flanks. I mean, the wingers, how would you sum them up? The Trezeguet and El Ghazi. And I think El Ghazi, pretty much similar performance against Spurs.
They kind of, I think, blew hot and cold would be the very polite way of putting it. They didn't offer much in defence, which that position you really need to, you know, you need two guys who are going to put a shift in. Little glimpses of what they can do, but they never really had any end product again.
Because I think, you know, the fullbacks, I thought, again, you know, like against Spurs, they defended well, but this was the chance to push the narrative, and they weren't, you know, it shows you the limitations of Taylor and Elmo when they're going forward. It's like they're doing the 75% job. They're not breaking past the fullbacks. They're not overloading. They're not overlapping. And this is what I thought was going to be the upgrades on last season was Target, who does like to get down the byline, and Gilbert's obviously got a bit of pace. They would be the upgrade to how we were going to play, and they were like they'd be like a the extra level in terms of fluidity, in terms of linking with the midfield, and then causing overloads and helping us get behind the defence. And you know, when you've got that, then Wesley can concentrate on being a centre forward rather than coming in deep and linking up.
Well, yeah, you'd think so. Just going back to El Ghazi as well, in the forward wingers, he was really frustrating today against Bournemouth. Like, he was offside like four or five times when we had a really good opportunity and he could see across the line. And I just think it's a little bit lazy from him. He didn't have his best game today. I think Trezeguet was a little bit better a couple of times in the second half. He got the ball and really wanted to drive with it. And that's what I think we need. We need someone to get the ball and just have a go rather than, you know, sort of dilly-dallying on the ball. But yeah, going back to Neil Taylor and Elmo, I think it's time for Matt Target. I really do. In the second half, fair play to Neil Taylor. He had a couple of goal scoring opportunities somehow. I don't know how, but I think when he gets the ball, it's no fault of his own. It's really not. Like, I think he's a good left back, but just for how we want to play, when he gets the ball, I just don't think he's going to go forward and whipping across for Wesley. I think Matt Target's that player. But yeah, I think I'd like to see Elmo stay in with the whole Gilbert thing. I'm little bit bemused to what's going on there, but I want to see Matt Target. But don't get me wrong, Neil Taylor's had a couple of good games, but I want to see Matt Target.
To be fair, Taylor's had probably two of his better games in a Villa shirt in the Premier League. But we're going to need a bit extra if we're going to have to start picking up points. And as you said, Target could be that man to give us a bit more penetration down the flanks, because the wingers on their own aren't doing it at the moment.
There were numerous occasions where Mings, especially, or we'd start with the ball, say in the right hand position, the right back position, sorry. They'd play it across the back. It would go to Taylor, and you think, just drive, you've got to get them up the field faster, which El Mohamedy will do to a certain extent, and he can deliver a good ball. But from the other side, there was numerous occasions, and similar to what Max said with El Ghazi, Taylor was almost staying back because he knew if he committed forward, he knew they were both in the shit. In fact, when Taylor gets into these positions, there's no end product anyway. So it's kind of like, well, you might as well just stay back anyway, because you're actually offering us nothing there other than an extra man, in case we lose the ball. But there was the actual amount of delivery coming in from the left was poor. And if anything, of the wide guys who featured for probably 10, 15 minutes, I actually thought Jota came on and had a pretty clear plan as far as, I'm going to get my head down and I'm going to drive at the fullback, cut inside and get the ball into McGinn, Grealish and Luiz. And I thought he did his job quite well. Certainly enough that I would actually start with him against Everton just to offer us something a little bit different. Plus, Trezeguet was absolutely fucked after about 70 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed that.
He was absolutely blowing.
Because at the start, in the warm-up, I noticed the defenders were doing a drill, the midfielders were doing... they had like Luiz in the middle and a couple of other guys, while Grealish, McGinn were like, trying to keep the ball and, play around it. And they had Wesley, El Ghazi and Trezeguet target practice, the three of them, with Richard O'Kelly practicing shooting. So I was thinking, well, this to me, it's like, the Barcelona where they would play the 4-3-3 with the man in the middle, but those two guys on either side were, meant to be a bit more forward thinking and attacking. And to me, those, just by the way they were like set up in the warm up, I was thinking, well, they're going to have a go at them as a three. But Wesley's so isolated and not connected to those two that he's coming deep, and technically he's very good. He'll have the ball, he'll have two around him, and he will get that pass out. He's got that strength to hold it up, but he's not, he's obviously not a goal threat at the top because he's not there, and the wingers aren't, actually creating the chances to give him time to get back in there. It's just not functioning at the moment. I mean, that game, Bournemouth, when they had the ball and in our final third, looked more dangerous than we did. I thought we were a bit powder puff, I described to somebody.
I'd agree with that.
He just didn't feel it. And another thing, apart from Luiz, when he psyched up the crowd after he scored, there didn't seem to be that much urgency. When we were chasing in the final minutes, when we got that free kick on the halfway line, and Heaton originally was like waving people up because he wanted to take it. But then I think Mings waved him back. A couple of midfielders were just milling around the middle, and it should have been just everybody up. Heaton, just pump it up there. Everybody get on the edge of the 18-yard box and mad dash, last chance saloon. But it just, half the team didn't seem to be that bothered about it. And it was just like, they're not desperate for this. They're not, it's not like, when we're going from 3-0 to 3-0 against Sheffield United. And it was like, because we would really give it a go in those last minutes last season. And it just seemed a bit tepid this time.
I don't know if it was a bit of a legs thing. I think, Grealish looked tired towards the end. Obviously, I mentioned Trezeguet did. I wonder if they seem to have had to work very hard just to play at the level they were at. And you kind of think, well, we need to be a couple of levels up from where we are. Whether that's, we chase the ball a lot. I thought Bournemouth were unsurprisingly very well drilled, as every house team has always been. You could tell that they've been a team together for a lot longer in all their key positions. They had partnerships all over the field.
Yeah.
That's one thing we kind of lacked.
I didn't think they needed to break sweat though today to get those.
No, I actually think they had another gear. If they really had to, I think they had another gear. Especially if they'd have wanted to, they could have committed a couple of people more forwards. Certainly in the last 10. And I actually thought stoppage time was almost embarrassing. We just couldn't get the ball off them. It was like good game management on their part, but we lacked, as you said, like an urgency, but a real kind of aggression as well. Like McGinn always has that snap in his play. But I get the feeling Luiz doesn't have that in his game. I don't think he's very much a cultured, deep-lying centre midfielder, but he's not a nasty player, I don't think.
Nasty is probably not the greatest word to describe it, but just
an aggression.
Aggression, fired up, it's like never give up attitude. And it was like, well, it's almost like they settled for the 2-1. I'm talking about the final minutes.
and it pains me to say it, but I actually would say Grealish actually had one of the worst performances I've seen him in a Villa shirt in a long time. I thought he was highly ineffective for long periods. Now, part of that I will actually give Bournemouth credit for, because I actually think they just took him out of the game, whereas actually it was McGinn that came to the fore throughout the game.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of how Bournemouth played, I mean, obviously what happened in the first 10 minutes dictated that they didn't have to play maybe the way they were coming into the game to play, because obviously they were suddenly 2-0 up after two mistakes, and it was, you know, not in their interest to keep it open, was it?
No, and tactically, they basically set up with a 4-4-2, which if our midfield three with the two wide men is working properly, you should be outnumbering them every time, and somehow they were outnumbering us because it became 4-on-3.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I suppose you have to give Eddie Howe a certain amount of credit for kind of outthinking Smith in certain areas of the game. Obviously, you know, the first 10 minutes, the plan goes out the window anyway. But you're right in saying that I don't think Villa, whenever they got ahead of steam, you never thought they were ever going to go in for the kill.
Yeah.
Whereas actually last season, they kind of did. You know, when Villa tended to get on top of teams, they would always come away from a period of concerted pressure with at least one goal.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be that threat yet. And and I think that will come. They have to basically work out how to get Wesley involved at the top of the, you know, top of the pitch, and not coming in at, you know, the 75% mark and midway between the edge of the 18 and the halfway line.
Would you say that Bournemouth got it right in terms of their game management? Because I noticed quite early on that they were clearly set up to spoil the game. Like whenever Villa would have the ball, it was very much, I will pull the shirt, we'll take little niggly fouls. And it kind of played into the way that Martin Atkinson wanted to referee the game, because I thought he had a very frustrating performance certainly for the Villa supporters, that it was very stop-start in the first half. A lot of fouls from Bournemouth, and they went unpunished quite early on. And I think they knew they were going to get away with it through the game. The same with their sort of their, I wouldn't say time wasting, but any opportunity they had to take the pace out of
the
game.
Well, yeah, I mean,
because you didn't get on top of it early, yeah. I think they knew, well, we're fine here. We're not going to get called up for this.
Because when you're 2-0 up, the last thing you want is the other team to get momentum, because it's, you know, as anybody who knows football knows, that 2-0 is a strange kind of lead to have, because it can flip so easily. Sometimes it's better to be 1-0 up, because then you're a bit more concentrated on keeping that lead. 2-0, you always think, well, you know, we're home and dry here. But that's probably why they wanted to keep them, you know, take away any momentum Villa might try to create or have. And as I said, they didn't really need to play themselves. They didn't break a sweat. And I thought it was quite a competent and accomplished performance by them.
I thought Harry Wilson was excellent throughout.
Yeah, had a few bright moments.
And they were very, very slick in their passing. And I think they could have, towards the end, if anyone was going to score, it kind of looked more likely that they'd pick us off on the break in the last sort of 10 minutes.
I mean, we scored with 20 minutes to go. And when that happens, you think, right, we're really going to push on here. But
yeah,
we had like a 5-minute, 10-minute spell after that where we, you know, pushed on. No clear-cut chances. We were always in their final third, not really having major chances. It was like we didn't really know what to do with the ball when we got it in that final part of the pitch. But then like five minutes, you know, not after, in added time, like we've mentioned, we didn't really go for it. And whether that's, like we've said, the players looked a bit knackered, which they did. Bournemouth looked like they were fitter than we were, better drilled than we were. But it just didn't look like we really knew what to do with it when we did get the goal.
Yeah, because I mean, against Spurs, we didn't have one corner. And against Bournemouth,
we had loads.
We had 10, and it didn't feel like any difference, really.
Well, I mean, we're still going short, aren't they?
Yeah. That was the one noticeable thing. Certainly me and some of the guys who sit by me were sort of commenting on, was our set-piece delivery in general was appalling.
Yeah.
Mm.
And Grealish and McGinn can both take that on the chin. That's one thing that, although today, physically, you know, Horahan doesn't always offer you that kind of bite in the middle of the park, that's one thing he does guarantee you, is that certainly with 10 minutes to go, he can make something happen. He can put a good cross in. He can put, you know, he's great from set pieces. And you just think, I don't see why you wouldn't bring him on.
You'd have to say he's probably the best free kick taker that we've got at the moment on evidence so far. And yeah, if you're chasing the game, as we've always said, he's got end product, and he would be an impact sub. And he worked as an impact. I remember when he was frozen out at the start of last season, he would come on and he would score, or, you know, create an assist.
I mean, my feeling with 10 minutes to go was, although it's kind of sacrilege to say, but I'd have actually taken Grealish off. Because I thought he'd run his race by about 75 minutes. He'd kind of, He'd had his moments. He'd kind of peaked in the game and then he'd kind of faded again. I just thought, maybe you do need fresh legs. Take him off and let Connor throw the kitchen sink at him.
He wasn't really impacting the game, was he? I mean, he impacted the game more in the first half against Spurs than he did the whole game against Bournemouth.
He had his, you know, he had his chance where he whipped it just past the post and he had little moments in and around the box. But there was a lot of overplaying and I wonder if there's a certain amount of him trying a little bit too hard to force it. And also, Grealish, compared to a lot of our team, he doesn't come as a surprise, does he? Teams have known about him for a couple of years now. Obviously, it was in the Championship, but they kind of know what he's going to get. And the thing for me that we lacked was that sort of dynamism and that real pace. You know, McGinn gets you up the field quickly when he's got the ball. He can really drive with it. Grealish kind of glides, but he doesn't have that like break of pace that can really, you know, hit and run and kind of get you up the field quickly. Like, dare I say, like in years gone by, someone like a Gabby would do, where you can just hit it in behind and go chase that and turn the game round. We never really had that ability today because we never had the real pace on either flank.
Sorry, did you just
and
say,
as you said earlier, that's
you
what
say
potentially...
Gabby? Did you say Gabby?
I did.
Right, you're not on the next show.
Thanks, mate. Let me get a week off. Fucking score. I'm going back to the States then. But it's that dynamism in wide areas that gets you up the field. You know, you look at any of your teams in the sort of the Champions League and they have those dynamic fullbacks that can actually get you up the field quickly. Yeah. We kind of don't have that.
When we looked in the summer transfer window, and he's, I mean, obviously played ahead in terms of Gilbert, but, you know, how much was...
Target was 12 million, wasn't it?
You don't buy a 12 million left-back to put on the bench behind somebody who cost you like 2.5-3 in a part... Well, it's a part exchange, wasn't he, with Jordan Ayew, Taylor?
I wonder if he's just trying to send out the message that, well, these are the guys that got us promoted. They're deserving of their chance, but ultimately, if you're not cutting it, I will, you know, drip feed these new guys in.
Just going back to that point about Grealish, would you have brought like Conor Hourihan on for like the last 10 minutes?
Absolutely.
Instead of him, because we did.
I would have done. Yeah.
We only made two subs in the end with Jota and Davis.
As much as he's our talisman, and he's always, you know, there is the thing of you can't take him off. He's always likely to make things happen, but he can't be immune to having a bad game and not being pulled.
Yeah.
Because Hourihan has shown on numerous occasions for a couple of seasons now, at least, he can make things happen.
Yeah.
So it certainly isn't. It's not a shot in the dark, is it, with Hourihan? People know what he's going to do. It's not a huge
we had that
risk.
Free kick that El Ghazi took, and that's when I was thinking, I wish, you know, Hourihan was on the pitch for this one because this one's beautifully.
You never fancied El Ghazi there.
No, you didn't. No, exactly.
You knew it was going to go in the upper tier, if anything.
And that's when you think, yeah, it's a funny one. This the Hourihan one. It's like, Luiz has got to produce, basically, and I'm glad he scored because that gave us evidence that he's got, you know, end product on the other end of the pitch. So it's not as if we've lost everything by not playing Hourihan.
I think in the spirit of moving forward in the right way, I think nobody in the team can be immune to being dropped if they're not cutting it. I mean, we've got a reasonably big squad of players who, I mean, I personally don't think Smith knows what his best team is yet.
No,
I think he's got a rough idea. But there's clearly, no, I think he likes the look of his centre-back pair and he's brought Heaton and he wants to start him. Wesley has to start because, unfortunately, today showed again we're pretty short up front.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of question marks for me.
But, I mean, I don't have a problem with Wesley because he hasn't had any shots. He hasn't been in... The team hasn't got him in the position. Every time he's... He sometimes, is, you know, he's had two or three around him. And he's managed to dig it out and you know, keep the game going. It's just there's something missing in terms of Villa's build-up play that he actually isn't. The chances aren't coming for him to get on the end of it. A lot of our chances are from outside the box.
I just don't think it's clicked yet with Wesley. I don't really think the players around him know how to make it work. I'm sure it will come eventually, but just going back to the bench, I just don't think there's anyone who's gonna come on and really, really change the game. Yeah. I think Hourihan was the most likely to do that, and even he didn't come on today. But there's no winger who's gonna come on apart from Hotter, but he didn't have the best game. But there's no one really gonna come on and change the game.
The fact that Spurs can bring Christian Eriksen off the bench, who completely changed the complexion of the game the week before,
kind of
shows how far behind the big boys we are now.
Yeah, and Hotter, I mean, I'm you know, I've you know, one of my theories, I think I said on the show a couple of episodes ago, was, is he somebody who, or actually when we first bought him, is he somebody that might actually excel in the Premier League above and beyond what he could do in the Championship? Because it's less, you know, hectic and it's more scrappy in the Championship. But then I was looking at the games in pre-season and he's impressed, but the quality of opposition has been pretty, you know, it's pretty low. And then in the against Spurs when he came on in this game, you're thinking, oh, actually, is he not Premier League standard? I mean, it's too early. He's made two cameo appearances. But the jury's, you know, certainly out on that. But as you said, you said you wanted to start him against Everton.
I would.
And yeah, we've got to sort out the both the fullbacks and the wingers in terms of going forward, or else the whole thing falls down at the moment. We're just kind of relying on the midfield.
I also still think, actually, I don't know what he's... I know he's obviously injured at the moment, but I've been a fan of Courtney Hawes for a while, and I know his main position is left back. He's a good athlete. I'm not sure what his delivery's like, but could he be a more solid option at left back and give you a little bit more going forward without having to go the whole hog? And
I think if you've spent 12 million on a left back, an attacking left back, then he should be your number one, even though, you know, he's obviously not playing now. But, you know, this is the thing. He's got these new players in, and you look at the situation and how many people have come in, and I always thought this Villa team, if it's good, then it will be the second half of the season where we'll see better results than the first. It's not as if we're going to have a great start and then we'll tail off. It was always going to be the other way around because they're finding the feet. I mean, the whole doing a Fulham thing, that wasn't my ever a concern for me. It was like, are we doing a Villa, the money ball, for want of a better term, when we bought players that are now all, you know, Idrissa Gueye is playing for Paris Saint-Germain, Jordan Veretout, Roma. I mean, Jordan Ayew is back at, is he Palace?
Yeah.
Adama Traore is playing for Wolves. So they've all upgraded who they're playing for. And, but we had them all in one team. And it's that thing, you know, they never, you know, obviously gelled or had the time. And obviously some of the players in other positions weren't that hot. Is it, we have some talented players, but they're just, you know, they're not going to gel. But I think with this lot, you can see, but we've been reasonably comfortable in games and we've showed promise. It's just that extra, you know, that last 10% of Wesley not being utilised or in the right position, the fullback's not giving us anything extra going forward. And obviously a bunch of mistakes have led to us losing points so far.
Yeah, I think if you take the mistakes out of the two games and say we had 2 points from two games, I think most people would be quite content with that.
Yeah.
Because I think most people would be reasonably pragmatic about the Bournemouth game and say, well, actually, we've played against two reasonably, you know, well-organised sides, and we probably haven't deserved to win either of them, but we've probably done just enough to actually get a point in either of them as well.
Yeah, because Bournemouth are kind of a litmus test, because they're a team that you can see why they're, like, you know, mid-table. They're pretty competent and they're a litmus test to see how you're going to do. I mean, they're a team that you need to be beating at home, but it's no shame if you don't.
I mean, you compare to sort of, you know, Newcastle going to Norwich on the same day and getting thumped.
Yeah.
That's a really good gauge of what's kind of around us. You know, Norwich having spent peanuts, Newcastle have spent money, but it hasn't clicked.
I mean, Norwich are basically going with what they had, and they've got a team that obviously know each other inside out, and it's a, you know, the equation worked to get them where they are. And when, you know, we've always said the bottom half of the Premier League isn't that much better than, let's say, the top three or four of the Championship. So by that definition, if they've cracked the Championship, then they should have enough to stay up without paying any silly wages on, half-assed players. Anyway, what would you do different to cap this off against Everton?
I'd go along with what Chris said. I'd start Hotter as well as Trezeguet, maybe move Trezeguet to the left-hand side. I'd bring in Target as well, and then I'd keep the rest the same. I think you've got to go... You've got to go for it against Everton. Like, they're a very good side. They've spent money as well.
Yeah.
But I think we have to get something out of this game. I'd take a draw, but I think we've got to start Target, get that attacking intent going. I'd start Hotter as well. I don't think El Ghazi's was brilliant against Bournemouth. He was okay against Tottenham, had his bright spells, but I think it's time to give Hotter a go. But yeah, those are the changes I'd make.
Yeah, because I think I looked at the stats from the Everton game. I think they beat Watford.
Yeah, 1-0.
From the looks of it, in a reasonably unconvincing manner. They had a lot less of the ball than Watford. They certainly don't have a team that really sort of stands out in terms of stars to me. They just look like a good unit. I think the fans want to see us go for broke, especially at home. And to get a result against a side like that, I think would give them a huge amount of confidence.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the Bournemouth result would be very much a kind of, you know, in terms of, you know, Spurs was just like a free game. It's kind of like, if you get anything from it, bonus. The Bournemouth one will be the one that will really bring people back down to earth. But I think Smith will stick to his guns, and I think he'll know what's worked. He'll be reasonably aware what hasn't. And I think with an extra week on the training ground, it'll be interesting to see if the likes of a Marvellous, a Gilbert come in. It'd just be great to see Villa be a little bit more dynamic, and when they get on top and they get spells with the ball, to see them really going for the kill.
Yeah, I mean, I would like also to be in a position after buying 12 players to, when you see the lineup, and as we've already mentioned, you look at the bench and you go, yeah, that's all right. Because some of those 12 players aren't even on the bench yet. And that is the concern that we don't have. Unless, I mean, Hourihane on the bench, I would say that is a potential impact player. And beyond that, it's
unknown, really. It's whether Codger's back or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think in terms of, you've had a couple of games, people have been talking about, oh, you know, there's lots of positives you can take, and there's, you know, there's some negatives that we have to work on. In my head, Everton now is all about, you need to get points on the board now, just to calm everyone down, give yourself some confidence. As Max said, would you take a draw? Probably, but, you know, it's all very good and well us going into the game and us saying, well, we played well, but we got stuffed again.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you want to get points. I'd rather us play very badly and get a nick a 1-0 at this point and just get the points on the board, and it lifts everyone.
But in terms of the positives, I mean, Engels and Mings, even though we've shipped 5 goals in total, I think they've played and haven't really put a foot wrong in terms of what they've done.
No, the goals haven't been their fault, have they? I wouldn't have said.
And you know, Heaton's a decent keeper, even though he balls up in the first minute. So just having that trio gives you a chance, I think, in any game going forward to get points. But it's, you know, obviously if other areas of the pitch start to fire up. But I think there's enough to suggest, I mean, you know, people panic and, you know, even if we don't get points against Everton, it's not the end of the world. I mean, we've got a reasonably okay start in terms of, you know, teams like Burnley and West Ham. I mean, these are teams, we're in a situation where any team can beat us at this moment in time. But we have enough to beat teams. I mean, we almost beat Spurs and we were leading going into the dying embers of the game. So it's not as if we're out of our depth. It's just a bit of luck at this stage and just, you know, people stepping up. Who have Everton signed? Just we're not going to do a preview, but looking ahead, is there anybody you're looking forward to or potential danger men?
They've got Fabian Delph.
Who?
Coming back to Villa Park. Well, yeah. But I actually think that's a good sign.
That'll be great to watch McGinn going through him, wouldn't it?
I think he's injured.
Of course he is, Max. Of course he's injured.
Bottled it, didn't he? But no, I think he's a good solid signing for like £8 million. But I think the big money signings they've made was Moise Kean, the striker. He came on for the last 20 minutes against Watford. You might see him at Villa Park. Alex Iwobi is the biggest one, though. £35 million. Yeah. He was on the bench as well against Watford. I've never been the biggest fan of him at all. Yeah.
I mean, that is going back to, it would have been nice to have another striker. It's just having that other option. And it does feel like we are light. Like when we're chasing the game, we were 2-0 down. Obviously, we peg one back and then you're going for it in the last 5 or so minutes and Davis comes on. And no disrespect to Davis, but you're just thinking, we know that at the moment that Davis is not a goal scorer.
No. I think we'll see one in January.
You know, he had his first game at Watford and he scored and Maupai went straight in with goals, didn't he? And you think it was such a no-brainer of a signing for me. You know, he's a nasty little fucker. He's exactly the kind of player you want. It was kind of, I don't know, you know, Wesley will hopefully come good, but to me, Maupai was that straight out of the box, he's ready to go. Signing, you know, you knew he was going to hit the ground running in the Premier League, and he has.
Well, I don't know if you knew that. I mean, I think Wesley's going to. No guarantee.
I did because I just thought he's such a live wire that you always think he's going to get involved. Wesley, you're going to have to kind of mould your team to play to his way. I think someone like Maupai can lead the line on his own, and he'll chase everything and get after everything, and he'll just be a busy player.
You do though want options, don't you? Davis is like a similar version of Wesley, and Codger. It's not really an option that gets you excited.
I mean, Codger is, as I've said numerous times, is one of these guys. If you can get him service, he'll score goals. He's great in the box, and we'd said numerous times that he's probably more clinical in front of goal than Abraham was last season. But it's his overall game that is just frustrating in terms of, you'd put him in the 18-yard box, and you'd fancy him to score 20 goals a season with a good midfield behind him.
Anyway, in conclusion, we are very much still learning about this team and what its potential can be. And hopefully we will learn some positive things against Everton. But we do need to start picking up points. But it's not panic stations just yet. those golden lions will start to tarnish quickly, though, if we're not picking up points at Villa Park.
The paint will fade.
But how are you feeling, Max, just in summation? A good A-level results, has that already been tarnished by nil point in two games?
No, not really. I'm still relatively positive after the Tottenham game. I think that was, to an extent, a free hit. Yeah. You know, obviously, I think this one was the one that we were really looking forward to and thinking, right, we should be doing something here. But even still, like right now, I'm not overly disappointed. I think we were slightly unlucky, but overall, I'm not disappointed. I think it will come. The team will gel. And I think we've just got to keep our heads. In the past, we would have, lost our heads at this point. Twitter would have gone into meltdown. Yeah. But I think it's been fairly content at the moment. We just got to stay positive, stay beyond the boys. And I think it will come eventually.
It was all okay around me. There wasn't any toxicity.
There was a fight, apparently.
There was a fight.
Some
Spurs
two geezers are fighting over El Mohammadi and Gilbert. Shocking.
It was a fight.
Never changes.
It was a fight at Spurs.
I mean, there were some very
well.
Pissed people, to be fair.
Standard.
It's that purity they've actually added. It's like 15%, that pale ale. That 4.2 is a lie, I think.
Here's a funny one, actually. Just before Luis scored that rocket, some bloke behind me said, "Get that idiot off the pitch." So I think that was quite funny. But then when I turned around after he'd scored, he was nowhere to be seen.
I love it when that happens, though.
I know, yes, brilliant.
Traditionally, it's Hourihane, isn't it? Oh, he's fucking rubbish. Get him off.
People
oh,
were
great
calling
goal.
For Hourihane today. They were, get Luis off, get Hourihane on. It was like, make up your mind.
I think we'll learn over the next few weeks and months how many gears this team has to potentially go into.
Yeah, and hopefully we will see the likes of Gilbert and Marvellous as well. Or are they forever to be left out the squad? Maybe they're saving them for Crew Alexander away in the League Cup. I think the more games in the cup we have, the better, because we've got so many new players. You know, we need to see Gilbert playing. We need to see Marvellous playing, and, even like your Lansbury's or whatever. And a couple of decent draws in the cup, obviously winning. And, Crew's not going to be any pushover in our recent record in cups is pretty atrocious in terms of, well, a League Cup especially.
I think it's about building partnerships all over the field, and that applies to people like Luis as well. It's getting these guys game time with each other.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't really had a pre-season with us, so he's actually not match fit at all.
Yeah, no, exactly. I would give, I would start him in the cup, I think.
I think we should go for it in the cup.
Yeah, no, and...
Yeah, I think it's a momentum thing, isn't it? And I think someone like Wesley, potentially he's going to need goals, and that might be a really good opportunity. And I think this year as well, because we don't have, the sort of the 46-game season with all the midweek stuff that we had last year.
No, exactly, yeah.
These guys there's no excuses for these guys to say how leggy they are.
Yeah, I would probably go as strong as possible, but, obviously probably giving Gilbert and Target a go. And Mr. Marvellous, if he's still around, if he's still a Villa player. Anybody out there, if you've seen Marvellous, do drop me an email. Photo evidence, preferably, as well. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple, please do give it a follow. On Apple, please do give it a review, and 5 stars as well, please. Podbean as well. If you listen on there, I saw a review pop up on Podbean. So please do make sure you follow it so you get notifications when the new shows pop. If you didn't go to the game, check out Villa on Tour's video. Anything exciting happen in this particular one?
No, we just had a laugh. Obviously, it's not ideal when you lose, but, we always have a laugh. So check it out, and check out all the recent videos as well. Subscribe. Thank you very much.
Do you do any focusing on the Golden Lions and any of the spruce up paint job?
Nah, we just cracked on in the Holt End car park. But I'm sure one day we'll Everton, actually, because it's a night game. We might go around, check it out.
Yep, check out, and obviously subscribe, and follow us on social media as well. And please do get the word out. You are the best ambassadors for the show. So please do tell like-minded people. And if you see a tweet or an Instagram post or a Facebook post for the show, please do share it and retweet it and help get the word out, because obviously a lot of effort goes into getting it out there. Thank you very much. Right, until next time, where we will have the Everton experience in the bag, Friday night game.
Villa Park under the lights.
I was trying to avoid saying that, but anyway. where we'll know a little bit more about this team. But Villa Park did look quite splendid.
Resplendent.
Resplendent, indeed. It was good seeing it. It wasn't looking shabby after we had actually gone to the Spurs space station in North London. It didn't feel like a come down. which was a good thing.
And obviously it's sold out for Everton as well, isn't it, I believe? So it should be a good atmosphere. They traditionally travel well and they'll bring a good atmosphere.
Yeah, because Bournemouth had a few empty seats in the side. There was one block, the furthest block, closest to the North Stand, which was missing a few people. But if I was them, I would probably hang out on the beach in Bournemouth rather than coming to Birmingham. But anyway, that's another story. Right, until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.